prepare for a truth revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free. The truth will set you free is Truth Revolution. I'm Dave. With me is Jeff.
Jeff, we're talking about the anthropic principle today.
The anthropic principle.
Yep.
What is that and what does it do?
It's science stuff. It doesn't do anything. It's a description of something, David. But we're talking about the anthropic principle today. Here is a lay-level definition. You ready for this?
Okay.
Lay-level, the universe is fine-tuned so that life can actually exist in it.
That's it?
That's it, man!
Wow, that's pretty simple.
Lay-level definition of the anthropic principle. The universe is so finely tuned, everything's just right so that life can exist.
That's awesome. I was looking on the schedule and saw the anthropic principle for this week.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what is he doing to me?
Did you look it up?
No.
Did you know ahead of time?
No.
Okay. But you know a lot of this stuff.
You helped me learn.
All right. Well, that's okay. I bet you know a lot of this because it's kind of like, we're going to continue this next week, actually. We're going to do 2 weeks of it. And this is kind of like the teleological argument, which we've talked about before.
Okay.
If you're listening to our show, you've never heard the anthropic principle, you've never heard the teleological argument. It sounds like a lot of big words, but don't worry. We're going to explain it all.
Going to break it down.
So, hey, we're from Revolution Church here in Salina, Kansas. If you are interested in checking us out, you can go to our radio show's website, which is
TruthRevolution.tv.
I pointed at him, and he spoke. That was awesome. Or you can go to our church's website, which is
Truth Revolution. No,
that's our website.
Sorry, SalinaRevolution.com.
Yeah, SalinaRevolution.com or TruthRevolution.tv, and you can find out about the church at SalinaRevolution.com. Find out about the radio show at TruthRevolution.tv,
or you just skip right on over there today at 10:15.
That's right. We're having church in just a little bit on this hot July morning. Mm-hmm. And have you bought your fireworks yet?
I have not.
Me neither.
I always enjoy everybody else's fireworks.
Let's celebrate our country by blowing up a small part of it.
There you go.
Anyway, so the anthropic principle today, life doesn't just exist anywhere, okay? I mean, life doesn't exist inside of solid rock. It doesn't exist inside of my brain. Just kidding. There's a lot of places life doesn't exist. It doesn't exist just in plain old outer space, despite Star Trek and what science fiction may have you believe.
Mm-hmm.
Life is actually a pretty complicated thing. It doesn't just spontaneously occur.
Yes, life would actually be hard-pressed to live inside of solid rock.
Yeah, and so now to give a more heady level definition of the anthropic principle.
Okay.
I'm going to quote Dr. Hiros here. He says, the correct definition of the anthropic principle states that humanity's existence places severe constraints on the physical constants, structure, and history of the universe, on the Milky Way galaxy, the solar system, and Earth, and its life. Most lay-level astronomy books define the anthropic principle by stating that the presence of intelligent observers, the incapable of measuring astronomical bodies and phenomena, requires many characteristics of the universe and the laws of physics to be fine-tuned. All right? So this is what we're talking about today. We're going to show that the universe has to be finely tuned.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to show that there has to be a lot of things that come together to make life possible. And one of the reasons we're doing this is because to be so finely tuned, it implies that someone had to design this.
Well, I mean, because everything, now correct me if I'm wrong, but everything tends to dissipate.
Well, yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
I
things mean, tend like to come to disorder. I think you're talking about the second law of thermodynamics.
And so in order to be held together and to be finely tuned, something has to be doing that.
Yeah, what you're getting to is a cosmological argument for the existence of God. All right, we're talking about the teleological. It's very complicated.
Okay.
And it doesn't just happen all by itself. You can't just have, you know, a soundboard just magically appear when you put wires, nuts, bolts into a box and shake it up.
So how do you know it's complicated? You've been reading its Facebook page again.
Look, okay, the anthropic principle, we know lots of things about the universe. For instance, Dr. Patrick Glynn points out that gravity is roughly 10 to the 39 power times weaker than electromagnetism. Now, listen to this. If gravity had been 10 to the 33 times weaker than electromagnetism, stars would be a billion times less massive and would burn a million times faster. meaning we would have never existed.
Wow.
I mean, that changes how elements are made. That changes how many metals are in the universe. That changes when life can occur. That changes if life could occur at all. I mean, you understand this? You just change.
I should have paid better attention in math.
You just change the strength of gravity a little bit,
right,
and we cease to exist.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you change electromagnetism just a little bit stronger, and we cease to exist.
Wow.
It's not like, hey, you get something called gravity, you get some electromagnetism, you get some water, you put it in a box, and poof, humans.
Right.
That's not what happens.
Well, a lot of people think that, though.
The nuclear force is 10 to the 28 times the strength of gravity. Had the weak force been slightly weaker, all the hydrogen in the universe would have just been turned into a bunch of helium, which, you know what that would have happen?
I have no idea, but I'm sure you're going to tell me.
I'm going to tell you. It would have been impossible for water to exist, had that been the case.
Right, because if hydrogen turned into helium, you wouldn't have the two parts hydrogen and the one part oxygen.
Now, see, you're always talking like you're not smart.
Wow.
But you are.
I am.
All right? The nuclear force, I mean, if the nuclear force was just a little bit weaker,
mm-hmm,
you know, we wouldn't even have water. Which, of course, you can't have life without water.
Right.
And so
that's the only thing you need for life, right?
And I have got 6 pages here of information about this stuff, just detailing thing after thing after thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've done other shows that are similar to it. I could have come up with 1,000 pages, probably, but we obviously don't have time for that. It's only a half-hour show.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of overkill.
Look, I found no seriously challenging arguments against the anthropic principle,
mm-hmm,
in the atheist readings that I do. And I do read a lot of atheist stuff.
He does.
We're going to look at some of the challenges in just a minute, and but let me tell you that some of these challenges, I just don't think they hold up.
Right.
When I read this stuff, I read it and I think, okay, that's not bad. This guy's got a fairly decent argument. And then when you start to analyze it, they just break down. And we're going to talk about that. Not that I don't respect atheists. I do. Some of them are very intelligent people. But when it comes to the anthropic principle, we're going to see that it really is a pretty good argument.
All right.
Even Albert Einstein believed in the anthropic principle. And we're going to talk about that too. All right, one more little proof, and then we're going to talk about what some of the challenges are, okay?
Okay.
A stronger nuclear force, even if it's just 2% stronger,
mm-hmm,
would have prevented the formation of protons, yielding a universe without atoms. No atoms? That's a serious problem.
No atoms, no people.
Decreasing it by 5% would have given us a universe without stars. Now, people are important, but stars are really important. I mean,
right,
you understand, like, I mean, just one little change, just a little tiny change,
mm-hmm,
and all of a sudden, atoms can't exist.
You don't think that's by chance now, do you? Come on.
No, see, that's the whole point.
Uh-huh.
You know, if it was just like one of these things was the case, okay, maybe that was an accident.
Or, right,
you know, maybe two of them, okay, that was an accident. But we're not talking about just one or two things here. We are talking about 10, 20, 30, 40, hundreds or thousands or millions of things.
But think of how old the universe is. It's billions of years old.
Mm-hmm, about as old as you.
Thanks. Not quite that old.
I'm just kidding.
Cut that in half,
yeah,
baby. But, you know, now some people would say...
Did you say millions of years old?
Billions.
Billions, yeah,
said
with a B.
Billions.
Okay.
If you take that billions of years, and we're talking about
billions of years,
yeah,
and what are the odds that could happen?
Yeah, it's like,
okay, so, well, and this,
I get bored sitting around for just an hour. Okay, now you think of how many hours are in.
This is why you go to Revolution Church, because you can actually pay attention,
right,
for more than a minute. All right, okay, I get what you're saying. Like, you know, during billions of years, mm-hmm, couldn't this stuff finally happen?
Given, right,
if you play the lottery once, you're not gonna win. But if you buy a billion tickets, you're gonna win.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what you're saying. Well, and the reason that I started pointing out the laws of physics,
mm-hmm,
was because time doesn't matter. No matter how much time you have, the laws of physics don't change.
That's true.
And so you change the strength of gravity, there is no life ever, period. That's the laws of physics. That is our universe that was set when the Big Bang happened.
Okay.
And so, you know, unless we're in a different universe, these things are set. It doesn't matter whether there was hundreds, thousands, millions, billions, or trillions of years before we came into existence. So does that answer that one?
That does.
All right, because that was a really good one. I like it. All right, Richard Dawkins, who's a famous atheist, he said that Einstein didn't believe in God. He quotes some of Einstein's anti-religious quotes in his book, and I'll grant that Einstein didn't particularly care for the idea of a personal God.
Right.
But because of the anthropic principle, all these details that couldn't have happened unless something designed it, you know, all these little details that had to occur for God to, or for humans to exist, Albert Einstein said there had to be a designer. Listen, he says, I'm not an atheist. This is Albert Einstein. He says, quote, I am not an atheist. And I don't think I would call myself a pantheist. We are in the position of a little child entering a huge library filled with books in many languages. The child knows someone must have written those books. It does not know how. It does not understand the language in which they are written. The child dimly suspects a mysterious order in the arrangement of the books, but doesn't know what it is.
Right.
That, it seems to me, is the attitude of even the most intelligent human being toward God. We see the universe marvelously arranged and obeying certain laws, but only dimly understand these laws. Our limited minds grasp the mysterious force that moves the constellations. Mm. You see, this is Einstein. That's what he said.
Now, he said that he's not an atheist, nor is he a pantheist.
Right.
Now, pantheism is many gods, correct?
Pan means like all. Uh-huh. So, like, everything is God.
Oh, okay.
So pantheist means everything's God.
Right.
You're God, I'm God, table's God, we're all God, happy, sing, sing, sing. and so Einstein said he's not a pantheist. He doesn't think I'm God, but something, because I just look at all the laws of physics. Mm-hmm. He's like, why are there laws of physics?
The order of the universe, and he sees something there.
Yeah, like the likelihood that humans would exist, the likelihood that everything is just right for life to occur, that is like astronomical. It's crazy. And so it's important to know, he didn't believe in a personal God, but he also said, Einstein also said, in view of such harmony in the cosmos, which I, with my limited human mind, am able to recognize, there are yet people who say there is no God. But what makes me really angry is that they quote me for support of such views.
Wow.
That's what Einstein said.
Yeah.
He's like, look, the anthropic principle, there has to be a God. And so as I was saying, there's no serious challenges in the anthropic principle. I mean, even Einstein knew that. One semi-decent argument I read basically says, it looks like a finely tuned design, but the design also causes disaster and evil for mankind. So this isn't a good God, it's just a mean God.
What?
Well, he's saying, look, the way things are designed are perfect for life. But the way things are designed also means there's going to be natural disasters and people will die. Mm-hmm. And so this one guy writing on the atheist website says, yeah, sure, you can use the anthropic principle, that's fine, but it means that there's an evil God.
Right.
Now, the bad part here is, or the good part is, they don't argue against it. They basically say, the anthropic argument's true, I guess.
We'll give you that.
We'll give you that. But if you're going to use that, you have to say God's mean. Now, if we don't have time to answer that on today's show, but we did a show about the presence of evil and the problem of evil. And so if you want to know how we answer the problem of evil, you have to go back and listen to that show.
TruthRevolution.tv.
TruthRevolution.tv. We're coming up to a break, but I do want to throw out a couple other things that show the universe exhibits very fine-tuning, okay? If the difference in mass between a proton and a neutron, remember those little things?
Mm-hmm.
I was doing some studies with my third grade foster child the other day. Mm-hmm. They were doing science and protons and neutrons, or maybe it was, no, I think
protons
was,
and
this
neutrons,
was the eighth grader.
Protons and neutrons are in the center of the atom.
Yeah.
Correct?
And they were like, you know, how do you do the atomic mass and all this sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'll show you. And I said, and I went, I don't remember how to do
how
this.
How long has it been? Been years.
But we figured it out. Anyway, if the difference in mass between a proton and a neutron were not exactly as it is, roughly twice the mass of an electron, and then all the neutrons would have to be protons or vice versa. You know, say goodbye to chemistry as we know it and life. I mean, if they were not exactly the weight that they are, it just wouldn't happen. We would not have life.
So that'd be like quantum chemistry?
I mean, we're talking like if Dave does not weigh exactly 201.34 pounds.
Wow, that's pretty close.
We all cease to exist.
Right. Well,
what?
I'm going to have to watch my weight.
You see how scary this is?
Right.
Like, could you imagine someone saying, hey, I want you to drink this bottle of pop, but if there is not exactly 151.3298 calories, you will die. Would you drink it? No way.
No.
No way.
No.
But this is how everything is. If the electrons, or excuse me, if the protons don't weigh the exact amount, if gravity isn't the exact strength, if water isn't exactly the type of chemical it is, if all these things, if any of it was even a little bit different, we would all cease to exist.
That's scary, actually.
This is the anthropic principle. That this couldn't be an accident. You can't have hundreds or thousands of things just by accidentally being the perfect setting for life to occur.
Right. Well, it kind of makes you like, well, if the universe is chaotic, things could change and we'll cease to exist. Thankfully, there's God holding it together.
Holding it together. All right, check us out. TruthRevolution.tv. We're going to be back on the other side of this break, looking at another challenge and some other things that prove the anthropic principle true.
Right on.
All right, so anyway, go to TruthRevolution.tv. Check us out. Consider donating as well right after this.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back. Truth Revolution. Check us out. TruthRevolution.tv.
That's right. You know, hey, we've been getting some donations lately, man. It's been going really well.
Right on.
People appreciate the show. Some of you stop us on the streets or call us or send us emails and say that you appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I appreciate that.
That is.
It's really encouraging to hear people who are learning from the show, who are listening to the show, even if you disagree.
Right. Well, and we welcome people that disagree because
to discuss.
Yeah, because how else are you going to find the truth if you don't actually have any kind of argument against it?
That's right. And I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's donated. The show costs us to put it on the air, to have the website up, especially put it on the air. And so there's been a large number of people who've donated to this. I just want to give a shout out to all of you. Thank you so much.
Right
and
on.
If you're interested in donating too, being one of the people who's pumping this program up and making it happen, truthrevolution.tv, there's a link there. You can pay via PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
So you can send it in there easily, or you can send a check to Revolution Church. Just make sure it gets marked for the radio.
Now, is that still 99 cents?
On PayPal?
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts at 99. You can make it whatever you want.
Bump that up.
So, but we actually appreciate anything. You know, a dollar is a dollar. And so, yeah. Hey, we're talking about the anthropic principle today on truthrevolution.tv.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how the people can actually be atheists after they look at the design of the universe. Because you figure, if you have 100 different values, and every value has to be exactly right, and if it's not exactly right, all life stops existing.
Mm-hmm.
How did the values get there? Was it just random chance? Is it a 50-50 shot on gravity that it would be this value?
I'm guessing not.
I'm guessing not either.
But before we delve into that, let's do something that I know a lot of people that listen to this show like.
What?
A Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
Oh.
Yeah. I've actually had people tell me, hey, I did that Bible contradiction stuff. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I had someone tell me once they like the music, the Bible contradiction music.
That's kind of cool, isn't it? All right. Today's Bible contradiction comes from the Old Testament, talking about what God approves of and what God delights in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first part says, God commands, approves of, and delights in burnt offerings, sacrifices, and holy days. In Exodus 29:36, it says, sacrificable each day is a sin offering to make atonement.
Okay.
Exodus 29:18, it is a burnt offering to the Lord, a pleasing aroma, an offering made to the Lord by fire.
He likes them.
However, second part says, God disapproves of and has no pleasure in burnt offerings, sacrifices, and holy days. Isaiah 1:10 says, I have no pleasure in the blood of bulls and lambs and goats.
Mm.
So we got a bona fide contradiction here, right?
Okay. Exodus 29 says God loves sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Isaiah 1 says he doesn't.
Right.
All right. Well, one of our biggest rules for solving Bible contradictions is that you actually have to read the Bible. Now, we are going to read Isaiah 1 where God says he doesn't like it.
Okay.
Okay, Isaiah 1, verses 16 and 17. Stop doing wrong, learn to do right. Seek justice, encourage the oppressed, defend the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. That's the paragraph where he says he does not take pleasure in the blood of bulls and goats.
Right.
You see what he's saying here is these people are hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, look, if you love God and you're living right and you do something wrong and so you make a sacrifice because you love God, God loves that. It's a pleasing aroma.
Right.
But if you're just a hypocrite, if you see orphans and widows being harmed and you laugh and you mock them,
right,
and then you go and make a sacrifice to God for your wrongdoing, he's like, that disgusts me.
Yeah, well,
that,
why wouldn't it?
That makes God mad.
Yeah.
And so that's why God can both have pleasure in and be detested by.
Yeah. Well, it's somebody that's trying to find their way around the system, a little loophole.
Right. If you look at Jeremiah chapter 7, he says, when I brought your forefathers out of Egypt and spoke to them, I did not just give them commands about burnt offerings and sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
I gave them this command. Obey me. I will be your God. You'll be my people. Walk in the ways I command you so that it may go well with you. But they did not listen or pay attention. Instead, they followed the stubborn inclination of their evil hearts. They went backwards, not forward, from the time your forefathers left Egypt until now, day after day, again and again. I sent you my servants, the prophets, but they did not listen to me or pay attention. Can you hear like the agony in mm-hmm. God's voice yeah. there? He's saying, look, you give me these sacrifices, but all I really wanted was a relationship with right. you. That's what these sacrifices were intended to do, to remind you that you need me. And that's not what they're doing. And so he detests them. It's like saying that you love giving your child a gift. And you do. We love giving our children gifts. But if every time you gave your child a gift, they stomped on it and broke it,
right.
we'd say, I don't even want to give you a gift yeah. anymore.
I want another
to.
One.
And that, my friends, is the answer for the Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
All right. Now we got that out of the way.
Woo.
Boy.
That was a close one.
Yeah, whatever.
The anthropic principle, my friend.
Uh-huh.
We are rare in the galaxy as life, or life is rare. Life doesn't just occur.
Right.
You know, one thing, I love NASA. I really do. Politically, I'm kind of like a libertarian. Like, I don't think mm-hmm. the government should really have very many programs and not very many laws and things like that. But you know right. what?
You appreciate NASA.
I love NASA.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
They have pretty pictures.
As a libertarian, I'm a little embarrassed to say that. But I do. I love NASA. Like, it's just so cool. And but one thing, one beef I have with NASA mm-hmm. is that they act like the recipe for life is
add water. Just add water. Ding.
Find a planet, add water, you got life.
Right.
You know, that's not what it is, man. There are lots of things you need. For instance, one of these variables that is unlikely to occur is that you have to have a terrestrial planet.
Mm-hmm.
Because this allows for plate tectonics and plate tectonic recycling. What happens on our crust of the Earth here is, if it just sat and it never got recycled, if these plate tectonics didn't work and bring the land down into the core and right. recycle it and bring it back up, our land would be barren, completely barren, and we'd be able to grow nothing. Animals would not be able to live off of it. You have to have plate tectonic recycling to make a planet sustainable.
Right on. Well, thank goodness for plate tectonics.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't even know how many planets in our solar system have that. I think it's just us. I need to check on that. Remind me to check on that later.
I will remind you.
All right. An atmosphere of oxygen and nitrogen ensures a temperate climate, protection from radiation. It allows us to see out into the galaxy. You know how many planets in our solar system have that?
There are one.
One! There are one. There is one.
Sorry.
So, you know, I mean, it's like you have, this is, what are the odds that your atmosphere is going to be oxygen and nitrogen? It's not like 1 out of 8, 1 out of 9. I mean, we're talking pretty unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a large moon that stabilizes your axis of the planet.
Which we have.
Which we have, and it stabilizes the climate. You have to have a specific type of star, which is perfect to stabilize Earth rotation.
Which we have.
You have to be the right distance from the star. You have to be the right distance in your galaxy. You have to have the right type of planet, the right shape of planet. You have to have the right heat of star. You have to have the right size of star. You have the right size of the moon, the right type of moon, the right density of the moon. You have to have the right kind of liquids on your planet, such as water. You have
and
to
he's not even looking at a list.
I'm not. I'm just like rattling them off because uh-huh. this list is crazy.
It is.
Hugh Ross has come up with over 200 things you have to have for life to occur on a planet. We're not even talking about the laws of physics anymore, which are super finely tuned. We're not talking about biology, all the things you have to have in your body that are perfect. We're just talking about things on a planet that have to occur right. for life. Look, the number of factors is at least 20, okay? At least. There's probably more like 200. But let's just say there was 20, okay? The number of stars in the galaxy is 100 billion. The odds of life, if there was only 20 factors...
is?
What comes after a trillion?
Quadrillion, maybe? Why do you ask me such hard questions?
It's one out of that.
Wow. Wow.
That means we are rare.
Is that one in one quadrillion?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't remember the number that comes after a trillion.
I think that's what it is.
Million, billion, trillion.
Quadrillion.
Davillion. One in one davillion.
Yeah, that's actually, 1,000 trillion. We'll just say that.
1,000 trillion. One in 1,000 trillion. Meaning the odds that there'd be life in our galaxy are less than the number of stars in our galaxy.
That's crazy.
Meaning we're rare.
We are rare.
I mean, you know, some of the things on Ross's list that have to occur in a galaxy is the galaxy cluster type. If the cluster of your galaxy is too rich, the galaxy will, there'll be too many collisions and mergers that would disrupt solar orbit.
Now, are you talking about like the density of number of stars?
Yeah, well, like we're a spiral galaxy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we exist right in between, I think it's the Sagittarius and Perseus arms of the Milky Way. I can't remember off the top of my head. But we're in the perfect spot in our galaxy. If we were inside one of those arms, or if our galaxy was the type that didn't have arms, it was just a mass, it would be too dense for our star to actually produce the right type of solar system, and we wouldn't be able to live. Right. There would just be too much chaos going on. The timing of a solar nebula formation relative to supernova eruption. All right, if it was earlier, the nova would be blown apart. If later, the nebula would just absorb all the heavy elements, and you wouldn't be able to get planets that and stars that have the right type of metals to produce life.
It sounds like somebody had a plan.
I'm serious about this, man. It's amazing, you know, and there's this guy, Kyle Kelly from infidels.org, who wrote this. He says, many scientists don't think the Anthropic Principle works. An alternative explanation can be found in the book, The Anthropic Cosmological Principle. This book argues that even though there's a very high improbability of the universe existing with observers, the properties of the universe that allow us to exist are also what allow us to observe the universe. With properties compatible with the existence of observers, if the universe did not have these properties, then we would not exist to observe the incompatible properties. You know what that means?
I have absolutely no idea.
Here's his point. This atheist is saying, okay, I agree that there are tons, thousands, whatever, millions of things that have to be exactly right for life to occur. He says, but life has occurred.
Right.
Therefore, it doesn't matter. That's his argument.
Wow.
He says, you can't say that God exists because of this, because it does exist. We do exist. So the fact that, you know, all these things have to be super detailed for life to occur shouldn't surprise us, because we're already here. Don't be surprised that you're here, because you're already here is what he's saying.
Right.
Now, I kind of get his point. Like, it's true that we're here, and that, you know, even though we look out and go, wow, look at all these amazing coincidences that had to happen to produce us. Like,
well, I just bought a car. I have the car, therefore nobody needed to make it.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what he's saying. But it doesn't really make sense, because just because we exist doesn't mean you can discount a creator. That's
right.
Essentially what he's saying. It goes, well, look, don't be surprised that you exist, even though it's improbable, because you do exist. Well, yeah, we do exist, but we're saying, why do we exist?
Right.
What circumstances allowed us to exist? And the circumstances are almost unbelievable. There had to be someone that tuned those things up, that made them work just right. Your car starts not because a mechanic threw a whole bunch of pieces into a metal shed.
Oh, that would be cool, because I could do that.
Lit it on fire and said, there you go, your car's going to come out. 50-50 chance you have a car. No. I mean, it's engineers, years and years of work, mechanics. And even then, you have to keep tuning it up.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing things that are designed well don't just occur automatically or inevitably.
Right.
They have to be designed by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that someone is God.
And maintained,
yeah. That's true. That's a cosmological argument. All right. Hey, let's get you over to truthrevolution.tv. Check out our website. Come on over to Revolution Church this morning. We're starting in just like 15 minutes. So come on over, wear whatever you're wearing right now. We'll see you at Revolution Church. Check out truthrevolution.tv. Thank you, everyone who supported us. Have a great week. We'll see you here next week. Anthropic Principle number 2. God bless.